then I grab a piece of grass and I crush it, I smell it, and the memories come flooding back and I can remember every play.
Back then, your Monday mornings and how you feel are directly correlated to what happens on Sunday between 1 and 4 o'clock.
A lot of the guys that showed up, you know, we grew up together, bleeding, sweating, crying, dying, laughing, partying. We were just kids, really. You know, think about it. We were youngsters in the league, and we put the league on notice when we came in.
A lot of things happened before 85, so we stole a bunch of USFL players. That was one of the things that really propelled us into the success that we had.
I'm in the USFL. I wasn't a NFL fan, if you would, and I really wasn't a big Cleveland Browns fan. I didn't even know that Clay Matthews was supposed to be good. I didn't know Chip Banks was supposed to be good. I didn't know Hanford was supposed to be good. When I showed up in Cleveland, only one person that I knew anything about, and that was a guy by the name of Eddie Johnson. Matter of fact, I called him up and asked him about Hanford Dixon. And he said, yeah, you good, Frank, but you ain't that good. Hanford's way above you. He's faster than you. He's bigger than you. I would say you probably got two or three other people you're going to have to try to outplay just to get on the field. And that was enough challenge for me to come to Cleveland. And when I came to Cleveland, I had a little chip on my shoulder to make sure that wasn't going to be right.
85 was a great year. Record-wise, I mean, it wasn't the best, but it was good enough to get us in the playoffs.
We were still a little bit divided defensively. It was going back and forth. Were we going to play zone? Were we going to play man-to-man? I'll never forget when we leave the huddle, we go to the huddle in 85. We'd be running too much zone. And I would come out of the huddle and look at Dave Adolph and I'd do him like this. That meant one bump. That meant that me and Hanford was going to be man-to-man. We're going to be bump and run, and everybody else was going to be going after quarterback.
We practically didn't even go back to the huddle because we knew what we were doing. He had a guy, I had a guy, and that was our job.
If one thing came out of that season was what the philosophy was going to be going forward after that season was over with.
It was a hot day in Miami. Minnie and I had the task of going against Duper and Clayton with Dan Marino throwing bullets.
And I think me and Hanford held the Marx Brothers to one catch that day on national TV. Once we played that well against such an elite team, that kind of like jailed the philosophy on what we was going to be going forward after that.
The defense kind of seemed to carry the team 84 into 85, but then Bernie changed all that.
If we'd had any luck at all in 85, because we pretty much ran the ball down people's throats, the wheels didn't come off against Miami. We got tired, and the Miami Heat killed us in the second half.
I guess they called it Marty Ball back then. Marty wanted to be a tough-minded, tough team on offense and defense. We ran the ball, and we ran the ball very effectively. Of course, we had Ernest and Kevin, 2,000-yard rushers.
We went from ground and pound to, you know, airing it out.
We were almost cocky. From me, Danny, and Cody to Ozzy, that's a good size, man.
I think it was the meshing of two different cultures.
Well, no disrespect to anybody here, but it was a joy to play in Lindy and Fonnie's offense.
But it was, Lindy called it pitch and catch. And a lot of teams do it to this day. They call it a West Coast offense.
But the good thing was he kept the play action pass. We kept the running game going. It was very successful from the year before. And he built on that. We still had a very viable offense that could explode at any time. It was fun.
We challenged each other. The offense on the other side of the ball, Reggie Langhorn, Webster Slaughter, Ozzie Newsome, Kevin Mack, Ernest Biner, Bernie Kosar. You know, it was really, really competitive in our practice. We didn't just let guys catch balls.
85, it was Thunderball. All we did was run the ball down your throat and throw play-action passes. In 86 and 87, we tricked you. We were smarter than you. We were more efficient. I mean, we were probably the best offense in football for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years. That was the jump out into space flight. You know, we went from Cro-Magnon to Marshot.
Don Rogers allowed us to do something that would really would have changed probably the history of the Cleveland Browns as far as Super Bowl is concerned.
Big, fast, intelligent free safety coming out of UCLA. And obviously he was our first round draft pick.
He could play the tight end one-on-one by himself.
And we needed that plug in the middle.
He picked off Dan Marino in the 85 game at the goal line and ran it back like 50, 60 yards to let me get a cheap touchdown.
Donnie was my locker mate. He was right next to me in the locker room. Talked every day.
I spoke to him the day or two before he went to California to get married. And honestly, to this day, he seemed troubled to me.
So sad because he had his fiance, his mom, his brother, and he also had a child, too.
He was missed.
Because the team was already had a very strong nucleus, we just came together. I mean, that was the difference, is that nothing was going to stop that 85 momentum.
From just the start in 85, it gave us confidence. 86 is when we really started believing. And from that point on, the road to the Super Bowl led through Cleveland.
For me, myself personally, I knew we were going to take it up another notch. I mean, we got a taste of playoffs. We knew we had the talent. Tweak the offense a little bit, tweak the defense a little bit, bring on a couple other players.
Al Gross coming in and Chris Rockins and Ray Ellis.
Ray was the big bruiser.
I asked Coach Oliver Dottie, I had a question. He said, Ray, you don't have to worry about that. Hanford and Frank will take care of that. We pay you to hit. And so I had to make sure I brought the wood, man. You know, I had to do what they brought me here for.
I mean, you could look to any number of guys and say, wow, man, he is having a hell of a year.
When you know you can win on any given Sunday, it's just a matter of putting it together.
The first game of the season is such an important game. During training camp, at least every day for a little bit, you're running and preparing for Chicago. I mean, that's our first game. And they were the Super Bowl champions. What an opportunity.
It was a challenge to play that defense.
I came out very aggressive in the game. I knew I could score points against them.
We just pretty much said, okay, we're going to kill these guys. We can score on them if the defense can slow them down. And if a guy named Dennis Gentry doesn't run back a kickoff, we beat the Bears.
If ever there was a moral victory and a loss, I think it was that one. I mean, we showed up and played well, and they knew they had been in a game.
We put 31 points on the best defense in the history of the NFL. We believed. We knew we could kill people. We could do this.
Pittsburgh always had a little star on the calendar. That's the game. You mark the next one. You always wanted to get them. And then that jinx, that was Pittsburgh jinx, they only last for so long.
You gotta remember, when we played Pittsburgh on Wednesday, Marty would cry in the meeting room. It was on.
I heard of all the stories and Turkey Jones dropped Bradshaw on his head and the, you know, and all the bench clearing fights.
But Pittsburgh, though, it was like a playoff atmosphere when we got with those guys.
Gerald Ice Cube McNeil. What do you have, two punt returns for touchdowns and all this stuff? After the game was over and we're one and we're all celebrating, and he goes, well, that wasn't that hard. And it was just, we wanted to squash him. But we couldn't catch him.
And being able to go up there and take a victory from them at their home place where they had dominated for so many years, I think was one of the bigger growing points for our team.
Yeah, I think that was a big changing point for our team.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh was truly a huge rival, and I didn't like the Steelers, but I never respected the Cincinnati Bengals, that organization. It was like, I don't know. It's just, to me, it was just a disrespect for the Cincinnati Bengals.
I have a philosophical belief that in big games, I throw bombs right away.
Two wider, fake 34, Z seam. This is a play where Ernest is outside of me. I'm in the slot, and Ozzie's further on the inside of me. We're going to fake the 34 to Kev. And we know that David Fulcher loves to blitz. He loves to stop the running. He wants to meet K-Mac in the hole. I'm supposed to act like I'm going to block him and I slip out. That's the opening play. We make this decision on Wednesday. We go over it again on Thursday. It works to perfection every time. Play on Cincinnati on that Sunday and they say, hey, fake 34, Z scene. And I catch it for about a 60, 65-yard play and we score. We were destined to beat them.
Boomer Esiason said that if me and Hanford was playing today, the game would be a 9-hour game because we'd be called for holding on every play. I think those are sour grapes, though.
Clinched home field advantage in Cincinnati, but we played the San Diego Chargers the last game at home, and we beat them.
For me to play against Dan Fouts is the greatest gift in the world. So I was a tyrant that week, you know, for us to be ready. And even though it was 47-17, and it looks like we beat them down, wow, did they come out playing.
It was meaningless to every game, but there were meanings to those games that were significant that really helped identify who this team was.
I don't know, maybe we were too dumb to know that we were supposed to relax against them, but, you know, when you start playing well and having success, you want to finish it.
In 86 in November, we knew we were going to the playoffs. By the time we got to the Jets, I had no clue that we would play as bad as we did as an offense. It was unbelievable to think we couldn't run it, we couldn't throw it, I think BK had two or three interceptions. Nothing seemed to go right with us. So you're looking at down by 10 points, 3 or 4 minutes to go, you're at home. You know, the city was in an uproar, and here we are losing with 3-4 minutes to go in this game.
The game clock is down to 3:27 to play. And now the Browns, heavily favored coming in, must dig out of a deep hole with not much time to go.
In my mind, I'm going, dude, it's 3:40-something to go. We got 80 yards to go to get 8 points. We haven't moved the ball all day.
I turned around and looked at my teammates who all had eyes kind of like this because we had 3 minutes to score 10 points.
This is a story where I said I never would ever question Bernie Kosar.
On 2nd and 10, Kosar stands in. And again, he's off the mark. Weathers, see, there's a misconnection somewhere, but they're not on the same page.
Very unusual for the Cleveland offense, too. Normally very much in sync.
So we go 1 incomplete, 2 incomplete, 3rd down. Gastineau hits him. When Gastineau hits him, he gets up. He's got a little blood here, and he's got his back all banged up, and he's looking all glassy-eyed, and then the linemen are pissed off. And when they get pissed off, that's when the party starts. So you got the big Texan, Mike Babb and Cody, and they all ready to roll.
I just looked at them all and smacked them all across the head and said, who wants to be a hero? Let's go down and be heroes.
I catch one, Brennan catch one, Ozzie catch one, Webster catch one. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe not so bad. I catch one, Brennan catch one, Ozzie catch one, Webster catch one, Herman catch one. We about to score, fellas. We scored.
Fans were leaving and then coming back. You know, it was amazing.
It ain't over yet. Defense goes 1-2-3. We get the ball back. We go back down. We kick a field goal to take this thing overtime. But I knew then there was no chance we lose this football game. And that's the day that I said, whatever Bernie say, I'm rolling with him. Whatever Bernie say, I'm rolling with the cat daddy, you know?
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Super Bowl.
It shouldn't have been that close, ever. They weren't that good. They weren't.
I think of the Jet game, and although it propelled us to the AFC Championship, but it was like, whew.
It's almost like we thought we could win. We weren't sure. But after we did, we said, well, we can do better than this. And then we watched film on Monday. We still got some more in the tank. and we never had reached our full potential, we didn't know how far we could go.
Playing in Cleveland's, the old Cleveland's Municipal Stadium, that's a true home field advantage. It was mud. There was no grass. It was frozen.
I mean, the things that I remember most from old Cleveland Stadium were the smell of beer, grass, that stinky mud in the end zones that smelled like a pig place.
I run the same speed at any surface, so I'm slow on a fast track or a frozen track.
I remember hundreds of times throwing dog bones off the field because they were throwing these great big ones at the other team.
Marty prepared us, you know, in training camp. He knew exactly how the season was going to end up for us, you know, down in Cleveland Stadium, you know, just slugging it out with people. And I think a lot of people hated that because they knew exactly what we were going to do, but they couldn't stop us.
Yeah, people were scared to come to Cleveland and play us because our fans hated your guts and we were going to kill you. So you were going to get beat up twice.
All right, everybody up. Let's go. Everybody up.
Every Sunday, it's the same thing. It starts out the same way. 45 guys. We got 60 minutes. Let's go play Browns football. Let's go.
Marty was one of those guys that could get in the mind of a young person as myself, and he could make me think that I could do better than I did. He made us believe in what he said was real.
Marty was, in my mind, a father figure. You know, we went 8-8, and then all of a sudden, boom. He made us into football men.
You know, Marty was a tough coach, you know, not just for me, but for the team, you know, overall. I just think Marty probably saw in me, you know, more ability than I was showing when I first got here to Cleveland. So he let me know when he thought I could do better.
Marty was a player too. And it's a little different when you have a coach who played the game as a coach as opposed to a coach who never played the game. For me, when I was here, it was really a family. It was a lot of fun. The guys had fun, but the guys busted their ass.
He had this little saying, "The gleam, men, the gleam," and we used to laugh about it. But I think all the guys would say this: it was a privilege to play for him. We didn't win the big one. A lot of people want to put that on Marty, but I don't.
There's a gleam, men. There's a gleam. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go.
You know, I think Marty gets criticism for playing too conservative, but a player can play too conservative, too. I remember even one play in overtime. I was an outside rusher, and I think I got pinned in for contain, and Elway broke contain, and they gained, like, you know, I think maybe 30 yards. It was a big play in overtime. Now, no one remembers that play, right? Because they just, or most of them don't, they remember the outcome. I don't think I would have made that same mistake the next year.
I'm going to step up myself and say, there was one play I didn't make that game. That play cost us. It was a third down, and the tight end snuck out. And John threw the ball way across the field over there, and I was out of position. And I think he made a first down. One play, but that play contributed to another opportunity for them to, you know, move the ball down the field a little bit more. But I just like to say this: I was the safety on the field goal. It's 2016. This is 30 years later. The field goal was no good. it was no good. I was the guy. I looked down at the ref, and he did this. And I walked off the field. But I walked off the field to a standing ovation. I'll never forget that for the rest of my life. But the field was no field goal. It was no good. The field goal was no good.
When you die, they put your date, a hyphen, and another date. I mean, you think the drive is bad? Wait till your whole life is represented by a hyphen.
You have flashbacks all the time thinking about some of those games. How much fun they were.
It's still the most games a Browns team has ever won.
I'm real proud of that team.
You know, everybody just kind of bonded and came together and became a family. Definitely became a family.
You know, when there was Thanksgiving, somebody's mom was in town, everybody went to that guy's house. when there was babies being born and guys getting married, we were together. We've been boys for 31 years and we were 5 minutes from each other.
As for the name for the drive, we should have called it the Dream. You know, because dreams don't always happen. They're not real. You know, you dream something, it's gone in a poof when you wake up. Sometimes dreams stick around a little bit, so you can write a little note down about them. It could have been called the Dream instead of the Drive.